It's At the Letters, Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson Smith.
Melvin Upton Jr., who was here yesterday as a Padre, will come out to make his debut as a Blue Jay. How about that? He wears number 7, and here he comes.
Batting for the first baseman, Justin Smoke. Number 7, Melvin Upton Jr.
And now Doug Bockler, the acting pitching coach, to the mound. I wonder if they know anything about Upton.
Really not something you'd expect to happen. I think changing clubhouses and being on the other side playing the team you're just on is, I don't know. You know, I don't really know how I feel about it, but definitely excited to be here, man. Good group of guys. Independent race and, get a chance to win.
It's At the Letters for Thursday, July 28th on Sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. My name is Arden Zwelling. I'm joined as always by Ben Nicholson Smith. Ben, what's going on, man?
Not a whole lot. It just occurred to me that this is probably the exact day last year that we would have done a Troy Tulowitzki special.
Hey, that's true. That is totally true. And yeah, absolutely. For some reason, a Thursday sticks out to me, or maybe the 28th sticks out to me. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was the 28th that he was acquired. So that was a crazy day.
That was a crazy day. We're sorry for being a day late, by the way, but the Blue Jays decided to play a 12:30 game yesterday in front of 45,000 screaming kids. So, Ben and I had to be there for that.
Yeah, well, it kind of makes sense, actually, because then we get to talk on the off day.
This podcast could be relevant for, like, at least 24 hours.
which is a good stretch, longer than it usually is. So that's always good.
Yes, we are increasing our relevancy, and Melvin Upton Jr. increasing his relevancy. It's not a good transition, but this is, I would say, a good trade for the Toronto Blue Jays. The Blue Jays get Melvin Upton Jr. from the San Diego Padres in exchange for Hansel Rodriguez, and basically just taking a very small amount of Melvin Upton Jr.'s freight.
Yeah,
that's it.
When you look at it, it's not
like
much.
I feel like I should be saying more, but yeah, that's it.
You should be rattling off more prospects here or something. But yeah, $5 million for a year and, you know, roughly a year and a half of a league average outfielder, and you have to give up a rookie ball prospect to do that. I mean, that price is very reasonable.
Oh, incredibly. If you're the Blue Jays, I think you kind of have to make that trade. And, you know, I think that the price speaks to a few things. I think it speaks to San Diego's desire to open up that spot and to move Melvin Upton Jr. out. I think it speaks to Melvin Upton Jr.'s, to the interest around the league from other teams. Like, you know, the Orioles were involved and it looked like they were structuring something around Ubaldo Jimenez. And that was kind of how they were going to offset, instead of the Padres, you know, paying the freight, they were going to take Ubaldo Jimenez back. So I think it kind of speaks to, I don't know, maybe Melvin Upton Jr.'s reputation around this game a little bit as a guy who, and it kind of started in Tampa Bay where, you know, I think some people had some issues with his hustle and with running out ground balls and like kind of those little things and with his attitude. And it's kind of followed him around since then. You haven't heard anything about it really since he went to Atlanta. At least I haven't. It just seems to be something that just has followed him since Tampa Bay, where, you know, at the time he was kind of getting removed from games for not running out ground balls and things like that.
Right. And it's worth noting with Upton that he debuted as a 19-year-old in the big leagues. And, yeah, you know, he was the second pick in the country. You know, making those adjustments for him were a lot different than they would be for a lot of different players. Like it's just a quicker pace. It was a very accelerated pace, probably not one that was the best for his development. But you look at what he's been able to do in the last year or so, and it's pretty productive. I mean, you have some power, you have some speed, you've got overall a pretty decent offensive player, a versatile defensive player who's probably best in left field, but can play right and can play center.
I think we don't think about, you know, how when you're 19 and you debut in the major leagues, you're in high school like a year ago, dude. Like, you're a kid.
Oh, yeah.
You're a kid. And coming up through high school, you've had these scouts and you've had these, you know, evaluators and coaches and people saying, like, you're the man. You're the guy. You're going to be, you know, you're going to go first or second in the draft. Like, you're going to, you know, you're going to get this big bonus. Like, you're going to be set. You're going to be a major leaguer. You're so, you know what I mean? Like, you're not exactly developing as a human being in the way that, you know, that maybe your typical high school student would be.
And even your difficult, I mean, yeah, bottom line, he's 19. So, and he still had the talent to get to the big leagues and play 45 games, hit a few homers as a teenager. And then, of course, he ended up really having a lot of ups and downs. And for a while, I thought he was done. I mean, he was a total afterthought. You thought that he had no chance of resurrecting his career. But what he's done for the last essentially 12 months, you're looking at someone who's been worth close to 3 wins above replacement. I mean, if he replicates that, this deal is a steal for the Blue Jays.
What's the thing is the talent has always been there with him, and it's obvious, you know, and you see him now. He's 31, like he's on the back half of his career, but he's still, you know, I watched him run the bases yesterday and he's fast as hell.
Oh, yeah.
You see him in the outfield and, you know, he gets around, and he gets the balls, like you see him. He's clearly got great bat speed and he can still hit the ball out. He had 16 homers with San Diego playing at Petco half the time, like clearly a very toolsy guy. You know, I think it's interesting that he had that, you know, his first year in Atlanta, right after he signed that contract, he got 446 plate appearances. He hit 184, 268, 289, which is abysmal.
Yeah.
Unbelievably bad. But then, and you know, so who knows what was going on with him at that point, you know, and then his second year in Atlanta wasn't great either. And then ever since he got to San Diego, who knows? Is it environment? Is it, you know, just the people that he's around? Is it teammates? Is it, you know, what is it? Like, it's so hard to speculate about what it could be that, you know, that brings this stuff out. But I don't think there's ever been a question that this is a guy who could be, you know, one of the best players on the field on any given day.
And the good thing for the Blue Jays is they don't need him to live up to that $72 million contract he signed with the Braves. Oh. That's ancient history. They just need him to be a role player, someone who can step in against lefties, someone who can add versatility in the outfield, on the bases. Just give them another option. You look at who he's replacing on the roster. They option Ryan Tepera, who they can still bring up in September. They can still use in the playoff roster if they get that far. But in the present moment, to have Upton as an option over Tepera, I mean, it's pretty clear he makes the roster better right now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And if you're only paying him $5 million, for the rest of his time with the Blue Jays, he has to be worth like half a win.
Yeah,
basically. And you know what I mean? Like it's kind of like a value play, really. It's like you look at what, like, last trade deadline, Alex Anthopoulos said, oh my God, my team has these like massive defects. I need to get players who I'm going to have to pay a lot of, you know, prospect capital for. I'm going to bring them in and they're going to be really good right now. And there's not going to be any growing pains. Like David Price is going to step in and be David Price. Ben Revere is going to step in and, you know, be this contact hitter at the top of my lineup and give me decent defense and steal some bases, et cetera. You know, Troy Tulowitzki is going to be Troy Tulowitzki. And I'm going to pay, you know, I'm going to trade all of my fans' favorite prospects for them. This deadline, you kind of see these, like, value plays with, you know, with Upton, who is a guy who has tremendous upside and he came at a cheap cost. You even look at Benoit in trying to get something out of the sunk cost of Drew Storen. And, you know, Benoit, a guy who has walked the world this year and, you know, was kind of on the outside looking in with Seattle and, you know, he was heading in a very Drew Storen direction with them. And, you know, it's interesting kind of the differences in the trade deadlines from last year to this year.
Yeah, it really is. And I think that when you look at the moves that they've made, you know, adding Benoit, adding Upton, it's almost like the Revere and Lowe part of the deadline. You just take out the Tulowitzki part, you take out the Price part, and then you've got these smaller moves so far. And that's, at a lower cost too.
But you're also getting players that you have a lot less certainty in. Like Mark Lowe was having a terrific year when he came over. Ben Revere was consistently a Ben Revere type player. BJ Upton, I mean, it's, you know, he's been really bad and he was performing pretty well this season. Benoit, I mean, you're getting him at the nadir of his value.
That's a good point. So there's a big difference between Benoit and Lowe. And that's why I think that the Jays aren't done. I think that Benoit is probably on a short leash. I mean, you'll take a look and they're going to put him in there right into the fire right away. But if he struggles for 2 weeks, I don't think you need to keep him around, for example.
Go ahead.
So that means they'll keep looking.
Yeah. No, I feel strongly that the leash on Joaquin Benoit has to be extremely short. And just talking to him yesterday, really great guy, like, you know, a veteran guy. I think he knows how to, you know, I think it's a good clubhouse for him. I think he'll, you know, fit in this clubhouse similarly to how Jason Grilly did. But I really don't like how the Blue Jays are selling this move. Because they're saying, well, look, we brought over Jason Grilly and he became amazing. Are you really going to strike that gold twice with a 39-year-old who's walking everybody?
Yeah. Jason Grilly, by the way, incredible pickup in retrospect. I'm not sure how much we've spoken about that because it's kind of flown under the radar. By the way, on Grilly, $3 million option for next year. I mean, you have to pick that up, right?
You think about it. I have some reservations about how he's going to finish this season. He's been so good that he has to come back to the mean at some point. And B, he's 39, coming off of major Achilles surgery. Will he run out of bullets come late September?
Sure. So you're going to keep watching him, but at this rate.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Obviously. Yeah. What he's doing now, obviously. Yeah. Like Jason Grilli, his fit in terms of fitting into the clubhouse with the bullpen in terms of team chemistry and like taking young guys under his wing and just instantly, like, you look at him in that clubhouse and you're like, yeah, this guy's been here for years.
Yeah.
Like, no, he's only been here for like weeks, right? But like,
yeah, weeks.
But he fits in so perfectly with that clubhouse and with that team and what he's done on the field. I don't want to know where the Blue Jays would be without Jason Grilli over the last month, pitching that eighth inning and striking out half the batters he faces and rarely giving up runs.
He's been a huge pickup. And yeah, to expect Ben Watt to be that is unrealistic. When you look at what he was in Seattle, he just wasn't a good pitcher.
That's what I was saying. Like, I don't like how the Blue Jays are selling this as, oh, maybe, you know, you saw what happened with Grilli. Like, I really, really don't think lightning's going to strike twice there. Maybe I'm wrong. There's a track record there with Joaquin Benoit. He was very good as recently as 2015 with San Diego. I mean, he's been good, but I don't know. I think this bullpen troubles me. It concerns me, this bullpen. When you look at, you're relying on Jason Grilli to keep doing what he's doing. You're relying on Joaquin Benoit to emulate what Jason Grilli has done. Brett Cecil and Jesse Chavez have taken significant steps back from where they were earlier in their careers and from the pitchers that they've been. That's troubling to me if those trends continue. And then past that, Franklin Morales is here. And I mean, he's, you know, there's a very, very pickled history there, I guess, with him and the Blue Jays. Who else is in this bullpen? Joe Biagini, Rule 5 pick, who is just kind of, you know, who knows? It's not, I don't like the bullpen right now.
Yeah. I think that's probably one of the big reasons the Blue Jays are looking for upgrades. I mean, it's clear you can upgrade this bullpen, you know, whether it's another left-hander to upgrade over Morales, Cecil a little bit of you know, I don't want to say competition necessarily, but just another option, an alternative to Cecil at a time that he hasn't really found his rhythm for this season. And Morales, I mean, it's almost astounding that this guy was on the list of pitchers who threw 100 miles an hour last year. He's throwing 87 now.
Yeah, no, it's unbelievable. As I kind of rattled off those names, it just occurred to me now, the Blue Jays don't, there isn't a player on this roster who has options.
Right.
Roberto Osuna probably does, but he's also probably Roberto Osuna. So that's not going to happen. You're out of moves in terms of optioning guys. Like in that bullpen, somebody's going to have to lose a job. If you're making a trade, somebody has to lose a job, whether it's a Benoit Morales or like an Ezekiel Carrera, somebody's losing a job and you're losing some depth probably if you make a trade.
And that's part of the reason, going back to your point on Benoit, that the leash on these guys is going to be short. If you're Benoit or Morales and you have four or five bad outings in a row, you might not want to get too settled in Toronto.
To me, the Blue Jays absolutely need to get an established, like a reliable arm in that bullpen. Like somebody that you know can go out and get you three outs more often than not. Like you're not gambling on maybe Franklin Morales has something left, you know, maybe Benoit can fix his walks. Like you're not gambling on that. A guy that can come in like Mark Lowe did last year, who was pitching really well and had shown that he's really good right now and is going to continue to be really good for your bullpen. I think the Blue Jays really desperately need that. Is it worth it would be my question of if you're going to have to trade a whoever, you know, a mid to top tier prospect to get that guy. Is that worth it right now for the 20 innings you're going to get out of him?
I mean, if he's someone who's under control long term, then I think you can have that discussion. If it's a rental, when you look at the Chapman trade, and obviously that's a unique case for so many reasons, and it doesn't really reflect the market for anyone else. But the Yankees, to get what they did for a rental, essentially, I mean, that's astounding. And I get why the Cubs made the move, but at the same time, I don't think that's a model you want to replicate if you're a front office, because it's just so hard to predict who these guys are going to be year after year. Sometimes you look at relievers and you say, okay, he's under control through 2020. Well, yeah, but he might be a non-tender candidate in 2017. So it almost, you know, some of that stuff doesn't apply in the same way that it would for a position player.
I wonder, because it's clearly it's the biggest need. When you look at this rotation, the Blue Jays rotation has been tremendous. You have, you know, at least your top three, you can say, have been so, so good in terms of Estrada, Sanchez, and Hap. Marcus Stroman has been turning it around lately. R.A. Dickey has been R.A. Dickey this year. He's been good. He's been bad. On and off. You're not really improving anymore around the diamond after you get Melvin Upton Jr. I mean, your lineup is set. It's the bullpen is really the one glaring area. And if you're going to move Aaron Sanchez in there to help that out, and if he's going to be that guy, fine. Then you have to go get a starter. I don't know. but you need to get somebody to help this bullpen. And I, you know, if Will Smith or Jeremy Jeffress is going to cost you like a Sean Reed Foley or whoever, like maybe that's probably too high, but like, you know, somebody from that kind of mid tier of prospect range. Like, I wonder if the Blue Jays are, you know, I feel like that's going to be too pricey for the Blue Jays to go down that road. And then you're just kind of leaving this glaring weakness on your roster.
It's interesting looking at the bullpen too, where you have five of the seven current relievers who never played for the 2015 Blue Jays.
Yeah.
So you only have Asuna and Cecil. Everyone else has been acquired since last year. Just as a, I don't know, just it goes to show, I guess.
Those are bullpens, right?
Yeah, it's like, bullpens. Like, they turn around all the time. This bullpen could be very different in 2 weeks.
If I could get Will Smith for like a Max Pentecost.
That's interesting.
I would do that.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought.
If I could do that.
And if you're the Brewers too, you have to do that.
I think so. Yeah. I think you absolutely have to.
If you're Milwaukee, you're doing that trade. Because yeah. Pentecost hitting pretty well. You know, catching prospect, they're flipping Lucroy probably anyway. Not that it's a direct, you know, one-for-one replacement. And if you're, I mean, they're going to get something good for Will Smith. I'm pretty convinced of that.
Oh, yeah.
But if you're the Jays, you probably aren't getting away with throwing, you know, a slot prospect. You probably do have to offer something good.
Yeah. So, and I, like, I honestly think I would do it, to be honest with you. Like, I do it. Every year you draft 40 guys, you know, you're probably going to have some pretty high qualifying picks next year. Picks that came from qualifying offers.
I'd say you got three of them. Yeah.
So, you know, I feel okay, like, trading a kind of a top 10, top 7 prospect right now to help this, to either get like I don't know if you're going to be able to get, I think a good starting pitcher is going to cost you two of those.
Yeah.
A good reliever might cost you one. I'm okay with doing that right now.
I probably wouldn't.
No.
Yeah.
Just because you don't think it's worth it?
I think you could go down a tier in relievers and go into the middle tier between the Benoits and the Smiths. And who's in that tier? I'll come up with a name. But right. And then you're giving up something a little
like
less.
Fernando Abad.
Yeah. There you go. Sure. Someone like that.
I want more of a proven guy. I just want, you know what I mean? Like, I want somebody that I can rely on more.
Even Buchter, I thought he looked pretty good against the Jays this series.
Yeah.
Picked up for a minor league deal by the Padres. And that's a great pickup by then.
What do you think Andrew Miller would cost?
A ton.
Would be pretty perfect.
Oh, it would be. I mean, and there's, it would be incredible. You know, and then you have kind of a built-in replacement for Cecil. He would be such an impact guy.
100%. My other pie in the sky idea is rushing Connor Green to the majors to pitch out of the bullpen. That's my other like crazy idea that's never going to happen, but that if I was running the team, I would consider.
Interesting. I mean, you'd have to convince the player development people of that one, I guess.
Whatever. So I'm running the team, man. Those people work for me. I tell them what to do. I tell them what to think.
How about the rotation, though? Because when you look at the rotation, it's funny. You have three guys in the top 10. In ERA in the American League.
You have a Cy Young contender in Aaron Sanchez.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not kidding.
It's not a crazy thing to say.
Yeah. And then you got two guys in Stroman and Dickey who are in the bottom 15 in ERA.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, it's interesting, like, hearing John Gibbons talk about it the other day. He's saying that probably that's the area that they would be looking at this point is rotation. Of course, there's the whole Sanchez dilemma. Who knows what happens with that? But, you know, I wonder if they were... Because there's so many moving parts. I wonder if there's a possibility leading up to the deadline where, say, they go out, acquire someone who's pretty good for the rotation. Of course, the cost would be high.
So for you're trading like two top prospects to get somebody really
something
good.
Like that. Yeah. So you're acquiring an upgrade.
Tehran or like a...
I think Tehran's off the table for what the... I don't think the Jays can get Tehran. But like...
Kashner.
Let's say Kashner.
Let's work
for
with Kashner.
Yeah.
Kashner for two top prospects.
So he's the example.
Yeah.
Kashner, you're giving up... I don't think the Jays would give up. Whatever it is, you give up something of value.
Two guys from your top 10.
And he's in the rotation. I wonder if at that point, I mean, do they contemplate the idea of, say, flipping a guy like Dickey to another team?
Just to get him out, yeah.
Clear him out of there. Kashner comes in. You still have Hutchison on reserve. You wonder because they throw so many things. Like, the number of possibilities that they discuss this time of year is crazy. I mean, it's just... So many ideas. I wonder if that's one of the ideas that they've contemplated.
Who do you think would be interested in Ari Dickey at this point?
So I would wonder about a team like Miami.
Right.
Big Park, National League, and they are clearly in the market for pitching. Jared Cosart is someone they need to upgrade over, and yet the price for pitching is so high, where maybe if they could get someone who's reasonably, you know, a kind of a solid starter, as we've seen from Dickey over the years, someone who can fill those innings, maybe that would be more appealing than actually having to give up prospects.
I feel like it's a tough conversation to have with a club to say, so, hey, do you want this guy, R.A. Dickey, who's like giving up, you know, who's liable to go out and throw a complete game like three hitter, was also liable to go out and give up seven earned runs in five innings. A guy who last year we tried in the playoffs and it was disastrous. Hey, do you want this guy for your stretch run and then playoff rotation?
But the thing is, as much as the Blue Jays maybe are, you know, they've had three rough starts in a row from Dickey, but the Marlins or teams like the Rangers have had a season's worth of rough starts from their number five starters.
Right.
So the level of desperation might be even more intense. Yeah, it's just something you wonder about, because the Blue Jays, if they are adding a starting pitcher, then, you know, does that, maybe it's just as simple as Sanchez goes back into the bullpen.
I think that's your fallback move, right?
That would be the default, but I also wonder if they, you know, you hear Ross Atkins on the radio mentioning the other day that maybe there's a way you keep him on his regular rest, and then he's not going back-to-back, and he's not exposed to the risks that come with being a reliever.
The Rangers would be, that's an interesting one, because there is a familiarity with that franchise, obviously, and they wouldn't need him to be like a shutdown guy in the playoffs. Like, if he in the Marlins rotation, I wonder where, you know, Dickey might be one of the top three guys in that rotation.
All
right?
The more reason to acquire him at that point.
And with the Rangers, I mean, you got Cole Hamels, you got, you know, Darvish, Perez. Like, they should feel okay setting up their playoff rotation without, you know, or with R.A. Dickey being the fourth guy or whatever, right? Just using him to help them get to the postseason and then not using him there.
Because that's his value. He helps you get there.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. That's his, yeah. And you're banking on these last, he's got like a third of his season left, let's say. So he's probably got like 60 more innings. So you're banking on like a less than four ERA in those 60 innings is what you're trying to get.
Yeah. And I'm not saying it's likely. I think the most likely thing is that they keep these five. They have Hutchison on reserve. But, you know, if you're the Blue Jays and you do acquire a starting pitcher, well, someone's getting bumped. And I don't know if you bump Sanchez right away. Say you acquire someone on July 31st. Are you bumping Sanchez on August 1st? Does Sanchez move right away? I mean,
yeah, I wonder.
Because the way he's pitching, like you said, he's a Cy Young candidate.
No, absolutely. I don't think, I wonder if Aaron Sanchez is ever going to go to the bullpen this year, really. Like, I think we're getting into that territory very seriously, where he's going to be in the rotation through to the playoffs and perhaps even in the playoffs if they get there.
Well, if they get there, you would certainly want him in there.
No, absolutely. And if the Blue Jays were to move R.A. Dickey, they then also have to go find a backup catcher. It's the other thing they'd have to find.
Exactly.
Which they're out there, but, you know, you'd want somebody decent.
If the White Sox sell, do you make a call on Deanna Navarro?
Oh, my God. Absolutely.
Yeah.
From a media standpoint, undeniably.
I know. We're biased. We're very biased here.
But, yeah, no, from a team standpoint, sure. Like, is he signed through next year? Or I don't know.
It was a one-year deal.
It was a one-year deal, yeah. So he could just come back here and be sour about his playing time all over again.
Hey, he was a pro. He was a pro.
We're going to step away. It's Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith on At The Letters. When we get back, we'll talk about people who are currently Blue Jays and no more pie in the sky trade scenarios, where we bring back our favorite interviews from years past. All that and more on At The Letters.
Strike one pitch. In the dirt, gets away from the catcher. Here comes Devin. Throw to the plate. Head first. Slide. He scores. Ball game, Blue Jays. 7-6 over San Diego with a three-run bottom of the 12th inning. And it ends with a wild pitch as Devin Travis sprints in from third to beat catcher Derek Norris' throw from up along the first baseline in a cloud of dust.
Oh, you know what? It's actually crazy. Me and Leap were talking, and you know, I was kind of dreaming of that scenario, the opportunity to get that game-winning run on a wild pitch. And I know that guy had a really good curveball, and yeah, man, just thankful it worked out.
It continues on At The Letters. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson-Smith. We're on sportsnet.ca. We're on iTunes. Hey, I'm going to do the Twitter handles now because I'm going to change it up. I'm on Twitter at Arden Zwelling. You're on Twitter at B. Nicholson Smith. Our producer, Sam McKee, is on Twitter at Sam A. McKee. Get at us on that social media. Let's talk about Jose Bautista. Jose Bautista is like, there's so much happening around the Blue Jays right now with like trades and speculation and this and that and like the whole Sanchez thing and all that, that Jose Bautista just kind of like quietly rejoined the Blue Jays the other day and is now back playing right field and hitting leadoff for your Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah. And He's offering, you know, I think for him, it's probably going to take a little bit of time to fully get back into that offensive groove. when you're talking about, what was it, 15 at-bats, something like that on his rehab stint?
Yeah, not a lot.
Yeah, after 5 weeks off. But in the course of the next 2 months, you have to think that he's good for 10 homers, 850 to 900 OPS. That's huge production. I mean, it's a big change to the lineup when you replace Carrera with Batista.
Yeah, he's 1-for-11 since he came back. But he does have 3 walks to 3 strikeouts. So that's very Jose Bautista in. This is going to be an interesting couple months for Jose Bautista. Jose Bautista has a lot to play for right now. When you look at where his value was coming into this season, coming off of last year, which is a really good year for him last season. I mean, you know, you're talking another 40 home run year. And I know that's not like crazy for Jose Bautista, but he hit 40 bombs. Like, how many guys hit 40 bombs at the age of 35? And so he comes into this year and there's all the contract stuff and spring training and all that stuff. And, you know, then he kind of has probably a step back in terms of production for, you know, the year that he had to this point. Although, you know, the walks were still there and the power was kind of still there, but it's a bit of a step back. And then he got hurt. And now he's got 2 months to play for this contract that he wants to sign this offseason. Because right now, you look at Bautista and Encarnacion. Encarnacion is far and away the guy that you want more than Jose Bautista today. Just depending on how, you know, you look at age, you look at production currently, you look at all that stuff. If you're a free agent suitor, that's the guy that you're going after. So Jose Bautista has quite a bit to play for these last 60 games.
Absolutely, he does. I think that if he can have a vintage 60 games, then that's going to go a long way to restoring that value. And if he has more trouble with turf toe, for example, or if he's not able to hit and he's not, which, you know, would be a very big surprise considering that he's hit every year since 2010. But if for whatever reason that production isn't quite there, then he's going to enter free agency at a time that his value has really taken a hit.
Do you think that baseball would pay him for what he's capable of, you know, even if 2016 continues kind of the way it's been, right? Like, you know, say he gets to 22 homers or something, you know, and say, you know, like the walks are there, but, you know, the doubles aren't quite where they've been. The average isn't quite where it's been. Do you think teams would pay him for the potential of, oh, here's a guy that has 340 homer seasons under his belt? Or do you think that they would more value what he did in 2016?
I think that they would take into account, say, the last couple of years. I mean, we're getting to the point now where what anyone did in 2010, I mean, it's just such a...
No, you don't have to go that far back.
So exactly. Yeah. So he's not getting paid for the fact that he hit 54 home runs.
No.
But if you look at what he did in 2015, I think that teams would factor that into the offers that they make to him. But of course, 2016 being the most recent season is going to be the most important season. And what you've seen is not good performance defensively in right field. And you've seen offensively up and down. So everyone knows that Jose Bautista is a 40 home run threat, and there are not very many of those in baseball. And of those hitters, even fewer of them are on the free agent market. So he's going to do just fine in free agency. I'm very convinced of that. You know, you look at the MLB Trade Rumors ranking of free agents, he's still in the top three along with Encarnacion and Cespedes. I think that's right. But it's interesting too, because all three of those guys are the elite free agents of this offseason. They all offer the same skill set, which is right-handed power. So at this point, when you look at the year that Cespedes is having, the year that Encarnacion is having, Batista is having the third best year of those three.
Yeah, it's not exactly a great market. Like, it's not exactly a super deep market.
It's a super thin market.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially there's no one can spend money on pitching. There's no pitching out there. And hitting-wise, even, it's not like you have a Bryce Harper out there or a Machado or a Donaldson. You have some pieces, and that's kind of where you're at.
Carlos Gomez?
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
But he started horribly. He had like one RBI until, and I know it's RBI, he had one RBI until like June.
Right. So it's going to be kind of interesting because there is like a small part of me that wonders if Jose Bautista is playing his way down into like a world of like free agent contract where the Blue Jays would be palatable to it. Like, because they're not meeting what he wanted in spring training, no chance. But I wonder if he's playing his way down to a place where the Blue Jays could, you know, compete for his services.
You can't rule it out.
I wonder.
You can't. Yeah. I mean, free agency is a crazy place in a lot of ways. I don't think that most of us expected Cespedes to go back to the Mets, and he ended up back there.
So maybe there's like a little pillow contract. We're so far ahead of ourselves, but like maybe there is like a little pillow contract scenario, right?
If Batista is amenable to that, and I highly doubt that he will be, and I highly doubt that he'll have to be. But if he is, there will be a lot of teams in at that 1 and 2 year level saying, hey, you know, short term, let's just reestablish some value, maybe throw a player opt out at him. But I think he's going to be able to get a longer term deal at big dollars.
And let's talk about this this Nationals thing. There was a report, I don't know who did it, but it was that the Blue Jays have inquired, or sorry, that the Nationals have inquired about Jose Bautista. I think a lot of people, like, you just have to, like, just read the language. It says the Nationals have inquired about Jose Bautista. I'm sure a ton of teams have inquired about the Blue Jays bats. You got three expiring contracts. Say, hey, what would it take for us to free one of those up from you? I'm sure Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins said, yeah, you don't have what it takes. But it's, I'm like, inquire just means someone made a call. That's all that means. It doesn't mean there's been, you know, in-depth trade discussions. It just means a call was made.
It might even mean it was a text message. It could even be a G-chat conversation. Yeah. I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
You know, the number
Bautista question mark?
Yeah, exactly. That could have been it. You know, 8 characters, and then you have this whole discussion about it.
You up?
Like, the number of inquiries that teams send this time of year is staggering. And the Blue Jays, you know, if, and I don't know the specific names, but I know for a fact that when it comes to the volume of inquiries that the Blue Jays send out there, it is in the hundreds. Like, if you are a major league team doing your due diligence this time of year, you're asking about teams' prospects, you're asking about teams' free agents, you're asking about teams' controllable players. There is not a trade candidate in baseball that teams don't consider. If you're a contending team, you're asking about hundreds of players this time of year.
Especially if you're in the situation the Blue Jays are in right now where they know they're buying. Like, you know, they're not, it's not like they're on the bubble of like, oh, which way are we going to go with this? Like, they know. So you have to be like that. Those, like, teams aren't going to come to you with like, hey, do you want Melvin Upton for this? Right. Like, you have to go get that. Like, you have to be, and I can't find the word right now, but you have to be the aggressor in those discussions. And if a player that would have fit perfectly on the Blue Jays got moved for a price tag that, you know, the Blue Jays could have met, and, you know, we go down to ask Ross Atkins, hey, what happened there? And he just says, oh yeah, I didn't even know that player was available. He's going to get crushed. He's going to get absolutely decimated. Like, how did you not know? Like, how did you not make that call? So, you know, as a fan, you want your team to be having these discussions. You want them to be making these calls.
And it's interesting, like Atkins said yesterday, the other day at some point this week, he said that the Blue Jays have had multiple trade discussions with all 29 teams.
Yeah.
So that means the Yankees, the Red Sox, even these teams that you're assuming they are never going to make a trade with, they're talking trade with them. So you can bet that teams in the other league, teams that are, you know, non-contenders, like the Padres, for example, they're talking to these teams all the time. There are just basically ongoing discussions. And that's the way it works this time of year, where you have these multi-tentacled front offices and everyone is reaching out to everyone else to try to find matchups.
A lot of tentacles out there.
A lot.
Yeah, Ross said that there's 5 to 10 teams that he's talking trade with on a daily basis. That means every single day you're talking frameworks with these 5 to 10 teams. So don't be surprised that somebody inquired on Jose Bautista.
Yeah.
I'm sure the Nationals are not the only team that has.
And I would be surprised if teams haven't inquired about Marcus Stroman, Aaron Sanchez, Drew Hutchison, Devin Travis, like any appealing trade chip on the Blue Jays, maybe short of Josh Donaldson, who people probably recognize as the Blue Jays franchise player at this point. Maybe not. Maybe they're asking about him.
Oakland traded Josh Donaldson. He was their franchise player.
Yeah. I mean, this
and
is
Alex
the time,
Anthopoulos called and said, hey, can we do this?
Ideas are flying this time of year. So I'm not surprised at all to hear that the Nationals inquired on Bautista, but it just requires that extra bit of context.
Yes, absolutely. So I think we've sufficiently pissed all over that.
There we go.
Yeah, I think that's what we've done. That's my take on context. Just urine. Important series this weekend with the Baltimore Orioles. The Blue Jays haven't played a game in their division in more than a month, I want to say. It's been a long, long time. Baltimore Orioles are a team that's not going away. As it stands right now, recording this podcast, they're in first place with a 58-42 record somehow, despite regularly starting Ubaldo Jimenez, despite a rotation that is just, you know, it's like you look up the word patchwork in the dictionary and there's like 5 pictures of like Orioles starters. And yet they're in first place. And so I thought the Blue Jays made a shrewd little move this week and having R.A. Dickey come back to start against the Padres on short rest on Wednesday so they could line up Marco Estrada, J-Hap, and Aaron Sanchez to start that Orioles series, because you want your 3 best starters going this weekend, because a win against the Orioles is also a loss for the Orioles. that helps you quite a bit, more so than a win against the Padres.
It's a huge series. I think that there's a lot of temptation, and probably especially so in the media, to blow up a series and say, oh, this series matters such a huge amount. But it does. I mean, these teams are within a few games of each other. Mm-hmm. They only play so many times, and now you're in that stretch run. I mean, this series does matter.
Absolutely. It's absolutely huge. It's going to be interesting to see the Blue Jays against an AL East team. We just haven't seen it for so long. I'm done with saying that like the Orioles are going to fall apart, because they're just not. They're not. I know you still think they're going to, but I remember a few years ago when the Orioles were like 90-1 in like one run games or something, and we were just like, no, they can't keep that up. And then they did, and they won the division.
Right. I still don't believe that they're this good. I really don't. I still think the Red Sox and Blue Jays are ahead of them. But here's the thing. If you're the Orioles and you add a good starting pitcher, I mean, if they're the team that trades for Rich Hill and his blister heals and he's good to go, well, that rotation, once you have Gausman, Tillman, and Hill, for example, would look a lot better.
And Yubaldo Jimenez or Giovanni Gallardo. Or,
oh, my goodness. Their rotation is so, like, it's such a bad rotation. You know, it really is. And yet they overcome it with an offense that's extremely prolific.
Red Sox kind of reeling right now. Eh? They've lost four in a row, I want to say. Like, they've had a very hot and cold season kind of all over the place. Like, a crazy amount of injuries, a lot of intrigue. They're hanging around.
You think they make another big move?
I wonder if they make another move for that rotation, just to, you know, get, you know, Rodriguez out of there and, you know, just get another guy. Like, I don't know if it's going to be, if they're going to pay as much as they did for Drew Pomeranz, but they certainly could with the prospect capital they have. They're lousy with prospects.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you wonder. I could see Dombrowski making one more move.
It'll be interesting. Anything else on the division? Anything else you want to mention there?
I mean, the Yankees are intriguing. I thought they did that great move by them to trade Chapman. They got way more than they gave up for him. So,
absolutely.
Good for them.
Yeah, that was an interesting little exchange of, like, the prospects they gave up and what they got. Chapman is only a Yankee for, like, you know, if you factor in the suspension, he's only a Yankee for, like, you know, 3 months or something.
Yeah.
And you just basically exchange some of your, you know, middle-tier prospects for somebody else's higher-tier prospect.
Exactly. Gleyber Torres, one of the top prospects in baseball. Warren's a useful piece. McKinney can be useful. I mean, really, it's a great move by them.
I want to talk about Devin Travis. Devin Travis the other night basically won the Blue Jays a game against the San Diego Padres with, like, a 14-pitch walk that doesn't even go down as like a plate appearance. Doesn't even go down as a bat, helps his OBP a little bit, but like that was like that battle that he had with former Blue Jay Carlos Villanueva was absolutely insane. Fouling off pitches like, you know, like two seamers in and like change ups away and like fastballs up, like just getting to his bat on everything, nearly hitting a home, almost like hit one out. It was just like, just, you know, inches past the foul pole, then came back and still drew the walk. Incredible. And then ended up coming home with the winning run on a wild pitch. Devin Travis is, for a guy who, you know, was, I don't know, where was he? A 13th round pick, not really a top prospect, like not like a guy that was on a lot of people's radars, traded for Anthony Gose. He's become a really useful piece for the Toronto Blue Jays.
I'd say he's one of their building blocks at this point.
Yeah.
He has to be, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, you just look at the production, .296 average, and this is career in the major league. So 110 games, a bit over 400 plate appearances, 438 plate appearances. OPS, .823, 4.4 wins above replacement. That's an all-star level player right there. When you're talking about a second baseman, he does everything right too. There aren't a lot of holes in this game.
For sure. He's like a guy you love having in the clubhouse. His teammates love him. Like, yeah, absolutely. I think the big question mark with him was defense coming up, and, you know, the defense looks fine to me. He passes the eye test. Like,
yeah. I think he's a solid defender. He's not Darwin Barney out there, but he's a good defender.
Absolutely. And it's just such a win in that trade when you look at where Anthony Gose is right now, which is, you know, double A riding buses, you know, getting in scraps with his managers and stuff. I don't think that he gets enough credit for being as good as he's been. He was never going to be, like, in 2015, he had an .859 OPS. He's never going to be that guy. But .780 OPS this year, since he's been back, if he's just that for the rest of the year and years to come, that's fantastic.
It's incredibly productive. And when you look at the trades that Alex Anthopoulos made leading into last season, goes for Travis, pieces for Donaldson, Lynn for Estrada. Those are huge. Yeah. Those are huge trades, franchise changing trades.
No, they absolutely are. And everybody's going to look at the trade deadline as kind of like his legacy. But yeah, it's those little, those moves, right? Like that were absolutely huge. Another guy that I think is performing really well and not getting the credit he deserves is J-Hap. J-Hap has been like over kind of the last, pretty much in July, he has been like Pittsburgh Pirates J-Hap. Like he's been like that guy who was really good at the tail end of last season. He's kind of brought that back and he's been, you know, last time out against Seattle, you know, he got his pitch count up, you know, through six innings. So he couldn't really keep going. He walked four guys, but he had one hit through six innings, struck out six.
He's been really good, yeah. You know, and you look back essentially at the last calendar year, what he's been able to do, it's an ERA of 3. What he's been able to do this year with the Blue Jays, his ERA is what,
3.327.
3.27. It's so impressive. And I think that at this point, if the Blue Jays get to the playoffs, and by the way, it's worth pushing those chips in to make sure that you do everything you can to win that division as opposed to ending up as a wild card. But if you're in the division series, say, I think you have to be completely comfortable with Hap as one of your starters.
Absolutely, for sure. And this is a guy who, when he was signed, I mean, you heard the groans from Blue Jays fans. Much like when the Blue Jays traded for Marco Estrada, the groans of like, oh, we just traded Adam Lind for a guy who led the league in home runs. Now Marco Estrada is one of your best pitchers. These are, you know, these guys are doing it. They're getting it done.
They really are. And it's one of the big reasons. Well, I'd say it's probably is that the biggest reason? That and maybe they're big bats. You know, you have those big three starters and you have some huge offensive production from guys like Encarnacion and Donaldson. And those are kind of the pillars of this team right now.
It's a good team. We don't talk about it enough. It's a good team.
Yeah.
Josh Donaldson is an MVP player.
Yep.
And he's repeating his MVP season of last year.
It's a better year than last year.
Yeah. Edwin Encarnacion is having a terrific season. Devin Travis. Troy Tulowitzki has turned it around recently and you know, he's having some pretty bad batted ball luck lately, but you watch the at-bats. Everything off his bat is scorched.
I want to say it was Monday. I think he went one for four. And he had, I think every ball he hit was just scorched.
Yeah.
Just into the gaps. Just a deep fly ball every time. I think they robbed him of one in center field. But, he's coming around a bit offensively as well.
It's a good team. Melvin Upton Jr. is on your bench.
Yeah, Justin Smoke's on your bench a lot of days.
Yeah.
Darwin Barney's on your bench a lot of days.
Darwin Barney, talk about a guy who like last year was sitting on his couch in September in the Jays call and said, hey, like we need somebody to help us out in the middle infield who isn't Minori Kawasaki. Can you help us out? And, you know, got himself some guaranteed money. And this year has outperformed Ryan Goins to the point where he is in the majors and Ryan Goins is not.
Oh, yeah. He's essentially, Darwin Barney is a Ben Zobrist light right now for the Blue Jays. I mean, he's not a switch hitter. He is, though. I mean, he doesn't have the track record, of course.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the $64 million contract and never will. But he is someone who...
Don't write him off, then. Maybe someday.
who's signing that check? I don't know. But he's very valuable. And he's someone who's, I think, who should be in the Blue Jays plans beyond this year, controllable through 2017. So that's a good thing for this club.
721 OPS. You know, you're not seeing too much of him. I think if he played every day, he'd get a bit exposed, kind of like Ezekiel Carrera did when he played every day. He's been terrific.
He's been really good. I think you'd have to say he's exceeded expectations for a guy who was signed to what, $1 million contract entering this year.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. Just like Gavin Floyd, $1 million contract, far exceeded expectations.
And that's what you need if you're gonna make the playoffs. You need to have a good bullpen and a good bench. And yeah, we'll see. Maybe when we talk next week, the bullpen will be a bit better.
I think maybe the team will look a bit different when we talk next week.
Safe bet. It usually does. You know what? At the rate of roster moves, it usually looks a little different.
And that'll be next week. We'll figure out what happened at the trade deadline and where the Blue Jays are standing when we are back next Wednesday on ATL. Our thanks to producer Sam A. McKee. My name's Arden Zwelling. That's Ben Nicholson-Smith. Thanks to you as always for listening. Talk to you next time on At